Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we kick off 2017 in the winter of wellness by learning about Soma Veda and how it helps the sick and the healthy. I'm Cliff the Change Agent, and this is Jump to the Next Level.
Many people sense that something is wrong, like a dull ache just below the surface. The American dream doesn't seem to be working anymore. Not everyone gets a house with a white picket fence, a chicken in every pot, and more successful children. Are you working hard but can't make ends meet, even with two incomes? Do you see the steady rise in homelessness, hunger, and stagnation despite the official statistics? Has chasing the American dream led to piles of debt and a rat race for jobs without meaning? Enough of this one-size-fits-all vision of happiness. The traditional worldviews simply don't have the frame of reference that can describe, much less understand, what's going on today. Those old frames of reference worked well enough for people old enough to remember World War II, but those default visions just don't cut it anymore. And traditional institutions like the media, schools, and government don't have anything better to offer either. It's time to jump to a new vision, a new American dream, because we are in a new era, a new age. The shift requires us to reimagine the way we work, play, grow, and interact with our surroundings. I call it the new economy. Instead of collecting more things, people will focus on awakening their full potential. That includes helping others and making sure that having enough is a sustainable lifestyle. Our vision has four pillars: health, sustainability, peace, and abundance. We make progress by focusing on projects that build up each pillar for a season: the summer of peace, the autumn of abundance, and so on. Everything seems to be in chaos because we are in the transition, several years into a multi-year shift, and the old systems are being overwhelmed. This show not only explores the new era and the transition, we engage with the solutionary doers and thinkers who are creating this next stage for the human race. Most important, we sketch out the blueprint for joining and thriving in the new economy. Don't get caught up in the drumbeat of tragedy that you hear in today's mass media. Jump on board and help us build the next level.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the show, and welcome to 2017. Happy New Year. It's Tuesday night, the 10th of January, and it's the beginning of the winter of wellness. I'm really excited because my guest tonight was actually the very first person I asked to come on and be a guest on the show. She immediately said yes, but we had to wait until it was the appropriate season for her to appear. And so we'll start with our quote. Yes, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. Our guest tonight is a professional healer with credentials in both Eastern and Western schools of medicine. She has a PhD in immunology, as well as being a licensed massage therapist, certified yoga instructor, certified Soma Veda Thai advanced practitioner, and a teacher, as well as a Reiki master. Her personal journey through self-discovery and personal growth are, in my opinion, the most important credentials she has, since she authentically has become the change she wants to see in the world. She uses this huge body of knowledge and an energetic approach to help others find and follow their true path. I'm excited to introduce my guest and teacher, Dr. Maureen Hughes. Hi, Maureen.
Well, hi, Cliff. Thank you so much for having me on the show tonight. I feel very blessed to have this opportunity.
Well, thank you so much for being so enthusiastic because you're really the first person I ever pitched the idea of this story, of this whole show to. And you, I specifically remember when I told you about it, you said, "I'm getting chills from this." And I knew I was onto something. But enough about the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the basics of, if I'm pronouncing it right, Soma Veda?
Yes, that's correct. So Soma Veda is a made-up word. It means the great stuff of life, that stuff of the universe that is just so delicious to eat and consume, you really can't help yourself. And this was a word, it's a system that was created by my teacher who lives down in Brooksville, Florida, Dr. Anthony James. And I became a teacher of this Soma Veda method earlier in 2016. But I've been practicing for about 2 years now.
Wow. I would have guessed you'd been doing it a lot longer. I guess you're just such a natural at it.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I learned about Thai yoga therapy back in 2004. It was introduced to me by my yoga teacher at the time. And she had just gone to a 200-hour training by a different teacher in Ojai, California. And she came back and she was like, "Oh my goodness, I learned this thing. I'm going to do this to you." And then she handed me the manual and she's like, "Okay, go do this on people." And I said, okay. It was honestly one of the most amazing experiences of my life to receive my first two Thai yoga massages because it helped me see what my body could do, but that I was blocking in my own personal physical hatha yoga practice. Like, I had no idea my body could move that way. It was only by this assisted yoga that I could understand that there was really so much more that I could do. And after that, I went to Chicago area to train for my first class in the Soma Veda method. That was in 2006. And then my life took me in a different direction. And then as soon as I retired from full-time biotechnology sales in 2013, I swiftly went back up to Chicago to train in Thai yoga. It wasn't Soma Veda. And then I learned about the school down in Florida and that I could obtain a 200-hour certificate in 26 days because it was an intensive program. And so I decided to travel down to Florida and train with the second American ever deemed a master of Thai massage in Thailand, Dr. J. And it was an amazing experience. And at that experience, I immediately signed up to become a teacher.
When you said 200 hours in 26 days, that means you were working or taking classes 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for basically a month, right?
Well, truth be told, class was from 9 till 6, and then from 8 until 11 at night, and we had somewhere around 3 full days off. And then we also did some karma yoga. If people don't know what karma yoga is, it's that love that you put into the land, taking care of where you are, because the program down in Florida is a residential program. And otherwise, we were either watching videos, listening to lectures, or physically on the mat training in the method of Thai yoga massage.
That does take the whole concept of intensive to a whole new level.
And what made it even more intense is that you're living with anywhere between 10 and 15 people for a full month and being away from your day-to-day routine, your day-to-day life. In the case of some people, their families, their children, young children sometimes. And so it's an immersion, a submersion into a completely different way of living.
So I think this, we've talked before, and I know this is a mind, body, spirit synthesis type practice and experience. And I think with the immersion piece, you talked some about the mind. You've talked extensively about the body. Can you take us a little bit further in the spirit side or peace, I guess, not side?
Well, everything that we do is spirit, whether we know it or not. And the physicality involved, the way that it touches our impossible emotional and mental side, ultimately, just like with the practice and the goals of Hatha Yoga and the Eight Limbs, is to connect directly with spirit, to connect with the God, to connect with the Lord of Love. I mean, there are so many names for the great spirit, the power of the universe. It is that deepest, most fulfilling connection that one can attain. And when it comes to the spirit side and how Soma Veda and all of its embodiments, because it's not just Thai yoga, hands-on healing or massage, it's help with nutrition and helping people understand how to feed themselves, both physically with the food that they intake into their body and also mentally with the type of people that they're surrounding themselves with, or, you know, the toxic environments that sometimes we find ourselves in, for example, in our workplaces, people end up going through some pretty tremendous shifts. And the goal that I have for my clients when I offer them Soma Veda is a transformational system, whether it's removing pains from the body or helping people come off of self-destructive behavior and patterns in their lives, or helping people see that the way that they interact in relationships isn't necessarily the healthiest because they may not have a healthy relationship with themselves, or maybe they have food addictions. I'm not a psychotherapist, but I am human, and I've had many, many of my own personal traumas to work through in my life, and by no means am I perfect, and we're all works in progress, but the fact is that we do have to continually work, and Soma Veda and all of its methods open up the energy channels in the body so that the physical body works well, so that the mental body works better, so that the emotions are more balanced, and so that we can really connect with that deep, true, innate sense of what we're supposed to be on this planet and do it.
Oh, I understand. As we were talking about mind, body, spirit, I don't have a website for this podcast, but if I did, one of the things I really need to put up is a Venn diagram of how mind, body, and spirit interact with each other. I divide my life into what I call domains. There's seven or eight of them, and a few fit in all three. Some of them fit in just two, and the remainder are in just one. And actually, I was thinking about not just myself personally, but some of the things I'm trying to do and how that fits into that mind, body, spirit interaction. And excuse me. And it actually did help me to be able to visualize how they all fit together. And I'm not sure how good a job I'm doing of describing the interaction. It's one of those things that a picture might be worth a thousand words.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, some people don't know offhand what a Venn diagram is, but I think, you know, the overlapping circles and the idea that, you know, many different concepts can connect in few ways, or they can connect in many ways. So today I was looking through my Facebook feed, and I was very excited to see that a gentleman, he's a little younger than me, who has been overweight for a long time and has been, you know, kind of on the party scene for a long time, stepped on a scale today and weighed under 200 pounds for the first time in his life since he was an adult. And, you know, he was diagnosed as diabetic and had some other health problems that led him to the, oh my gosh, I'm so young and I'm already like an elderly person. And the beautiful statement that he had made was, I now take a moment to consider what I am putting in my body and if it is going to serve me on all levels. And he woke up and he's taking care of himself. And so this interconnectedness is inevitable, is ultimately involved, even though many on this planet may choose to believe that it has nothing to do with it.
And that interconnectedness, it's not just as an individual mind, body, spirit, it's as a community as well. And I think you described, you know, your interaction with this person and how you're building community that way. I love it.
You know, whether I'm building community by directly relating to a person or somebody seeing something that I've written in a public venue, whatever is inspiring to them, if I happen to inspire them, I feel so blessed and honored. And, you know, it's like the butterfly effect, right? We all somehow affect the energy of everyone else on this planet. One deed that is done, you know, 50 deeds away, there's still energy connected to all of it. And so if we could always put the goodness and brightness out to the universe, you know, that's definitely what I would like to come back to me. So, and spirit is a big part of that. And again, you know, a lot of people may not believe that anything like that exists, but, you know, the concept of it does supersede any kind of egotistical system that we may place ourselves into.
Agreed. You know, there are times, there was a time when I first began to decide to get healthy, and I realized as I was doing the things to my body that I needed to lose the weight and get stronger, all of a sudden my concentration went better, got better. And, it was also about the same time that yoga stopped being just an extra piece of the exercise and the, on the mat, off the mat philosophy began to really sink in. So this, the spiritual part of it. So yep, I understand exactly.
I started yoga because a friend forced me to. I was in graduate school. This was in 1999, I believe. So this was around my second year of grad school. And she looked at me and she's like, Maureen, you are so stressed out. You need to come to yoga. And I said, there is no way in hell I am doing yoga, because the first time I did it in college, I couldn't move for 3 days after doing yoga. And I had no idea. My body and my mind were so disconnected, and that's why I couldn't move for 3 days. But I had justified in my mind that yoga was too hard for me and I couldn't do it. So I ended up in class in 1999, and I looked at her, and she's like, well, you know, you don't have to do everything that the teacher tells you to do. And I'm like, what do you mean? No, it's okay. Like, if you can't do something, you just don't do it. I'm like, no, you have to do everything, because, you know, that was the concept I had laid out in my mind. Type A personality, overachiever, got to do it. And once, you know, it took me about a year for me to kind of start settling into the idea of it's okay not to be able to do everything. But then once I did settle into that idea, and took a moment to slow down and really listen to my body and assess what I could and couldn't do, and to be accepting of the fact that I couldn't do something. That was the first key to me stepping on the right path to then being able to have that achievement in a slow and gentle, but ultimately successful way. Of course, this is all, you know, still ego mind talking. But getting my body back into a healthy enough state so that touching my toes was feasible, so that doing a handstand safely was feasible, getting my sciatica in check, getting my low back back into place, getting the chronic pains in my body out of my body. I mean, in my mid-20s, I was inflamed. I probably had fibromyalgia and didn't even know it. It ultimately came down to this one moment. I was in yoga class. I think I was around 24 years old, and it was a pretty intense workout. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's time for corpse pose shavasana. I'm laying down on the mat, and usually I would just buzz and vibrate and have no sense of groundedness, kind of like a weird floaty feeling. But that day was a little different. I was laying down on the mat and I opened my eyes and I saw like these waves of blue, like I was underneath the ocean. And I had looked up at the ceiling and I'm like, am I really seeing this? And in that moment, the scientist in me, the one that had to prove that everything in this universe could be proven through science, in that moment I was like, poof, there is a God. There is something more out there. And that was like the big epiphany when I was around 24 years old. And then my ego kind of squashed it for a really, really, really long time. And then just a few years ago, I had that moment of truth where I needed to decide what I was really going to do with my life. If I was just going to live some facade, some charade that I had somehow created for myself, or if I was really going to move forward and live my soul's purpose, which is what I feel like I'm doing now, by helping other people heal.
You know, you've talked a whole lot. You've mentioned ego several times, and as you were telling your story and telling about your journey, I remember of one of the early instructors I have, Camilla Figueroa. If you happen to be listening, this is a shout out to you. When I first met her, I thought she was the human avatar for Joy, and I mean, I don't know that I can have a higher praise of a person. But over the course of the next few months of going to her class, she basically taught you how to be that way. And one of the key ingredients was that learning that the ego does have a place. But the catch is you kind of have to trick your ego because it wants to be in control. And typically, you end up with problems if you let the ego be in control. What you have to do is keep the ego busy because it's very good at, you know, powering through things. So You've got to trick your ego into thinking it's in control, but let it do its thing. And actually, your ego has a place in life. It's just its place is not in charge, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, I think ego is necessary for self-preservation. I mean, it's like the common adage, you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. We need to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, make sure that we're healthy enough in order to pass on whatever it is needs to be passed on energetically, physically, to the people that we encounter. We're never going to be able to do our jobs well if we don't take care of ourselves first.
I get on a plane several times a month, and as you were saying that, I was remembering In case of oxygen, put the mask on yourself first, then help those around you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, kind of guiding the conversation a little bit back toward your healing practice, tell us how Somaveda is different from Ayurveda, which my understanding of that is that it's the ancient Indian healing methods.
Right.
And I'll see if I'm right or wrong.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of background on Thai yoga and all of its encompassing, embodying elements. So Ayurveda is actually a very generous part of what Somaveda, Thai yoga, and indigenous therapies really is. So Ayurveda literally means the science of life, and this is a 5,000-year-old ancient Indian system. And about 2,500 years ago, the personal doctor of the Buddha, his name was Dr. Zhivago. In other dialects, it's Jivaka. Dr. Zhivago was studying and traveling as the Buddha did, and Dr. Zhivago distilled the traditional Chinese medicine system and the Indian Ayurvedic system into the Thai system, which simplified into all of the hundreds of thousands of chakras and nadis in the body into 10 simple lines, which are known as Sipsen, the energy lines. And that's what we work in Thai yoga therapy. We bend and stretch people into different positions, like Hatha yoga. People would do that to themselves. But what makes Thai uniquely Thai is that we add in additional technique. So compression or thumb rolling on the energy lines or tapping or hacking on certain parts of the body in order to, you know, one could say knock the energy loose. We see pain in the body as being energetic blockages, and that many of these techniques that are outlined and have been passed down for thousands of years can help new freedom to occur in the body. But yes, Ayurveda, being the science of life, is mostly a system of dietary modification, habitual modification, for example, time of day that you rise, how many meals that you eat, cleanliness, the type of people that you are around, hygiene in general, mental, physical, spiritual hygiene. But traditional Indian Ayurveda also involves the use of herbs as part of the way to keep people balanced in their body, mind, and spirit. We think about the doshas being the qualities, or some people call them the defilements of humanity. The doshas are composed of the 5 different elements in the Indian system. There are only 4 elements in the Thai system because ether and air are combined in the Thai system into air. And we can modify the pressure, the temperature of the room, the speed of treatment based on how we diagnose. Shouldn't say diagnose, but Indian Ayurvedic doctors diagnose their clients. What I do is also similar in the sense that I give an assessment and I determine that a certain dosha may be imbalanced, and therefore I modify my method of treatment to help alleviate that imbalance. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
I may have made more questions in that answer.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a whole lot was going through my mind as you were answering, and I should have made notes because they all, to be perfectly honest, I can't remember any of the questions that came to mind.
What I can tell you is that the concept is that each human body, each animal body, each plant body is made of different elements. And either we are going to pacify our doshas to become more balanced, or we are going to aggravate our doshas to become more imbalanced. And so we can modify the foods that we eat, we can modify our daily habits to either become more aggravated or more balanced. And I don't know about you, but I prefer to work towards becoming more balanced.
Well, I always like being balanced, but as my wife is will attest, balance is not one of my great attributes. I fall over a lot.
Oh, I see. I see. Physical balance as opposed to mental balance. Well, I mean, as you know, it's all tied together.
I grew up in the Texas Panhandle, and I was 17 before I realized trees could actually grow straight because there's so much wind up there. That's my excuse for my tree pose being wobbly.
You know, it's interesting because one of the most beautiful, breathtaking paintings I ever saw was at the Houston Institute of Art, and it was of a tree nearly blowing over sideways in a thunderstorm. But again, Texas. So,
as a matter of fact, in the area I grew up in, the tree that you're talking about, they lifted just the tree as a lithograph from that picture you're describing, and that was the symbol for one of the regional banks.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting.
So,
okay.
You know, earlier we were talking. You talked about relieving pain, and during our rehearsal type conversation earlier today, you made a comment about holding on to these adverse events causes the pain. It's not just the blockage, but it's also things that have happened in your past life, earlier in your life. You want to
absolutely. So, in my own physical healing journey, which has included hatha yoga, Nia, belly dance, and this is my shameless promotion of my friend, the lovely Miss Amy Amore, who is one of the best fusion dancers here in St. Louis. Through Thai yoga, through Rolfing, through Heller work, through any kind of conscientious body work, you can start releasing stuff from when you're 3 years old. You didn't even know that you had that auntie that pulled your arm a little bit too hard because she was mad you were trying to run away and she was hungover. and yes, I think that is a real memory in my life. Falling off of bicycles, falling off of skateboards, accidents, you know, unless they really are treated right away with proper care, they get enveloped in our bodies and will prevent proper function of our bodies. And when we become so limited in our body function, you know, our mental function and how we understand the connection between our mind and body start deteriorating. Because the brain is smart enough when there is immense pain in the body to shut down neurological activity to that part of our body. And then you wonder when you're, you know, 35 years old, why you have horrible knee pain and hip pain and, wow, I can't walk and jogging half a mile is too difficult. And then you're like, well, there must really something bad going on in my body. And then, you know, getting the physical body work, doing the yoga, really getting in and deep diving into the cause of the pains, stuff starts coming out, and it takes a lot of processing. And like we had talked about earlier this evening, processing needs to happen at a relatively comfortable pace. I mean, you don't want to stagnate the processing, but sometimes some really big stuff comes out, and you need to just go on hold for a little bit. We have so many other things that we need to do in our lives anyway. But alleviating pains in the body can be a long and arduous process depending on the surroundings that you grew up in as a child, the type of pressure that you had from a peer system, coaches that you had in life, if you were in sports and had a lot of injuries. Keep pressing on, keep going forward, don't stop. You know, the popular adage, no pain, no gain, I think that's probably one of the most damaging things that you could ever say to anybody. So that's what we do. As healers, as people who are massage therapists, we do our best to alleviate pain from the body. I just feel particularly blessed that I am able to take a spiritual aspect to it as well and open up and talk to people and take a deeper dive into where they are emotionally if they choose to go there. I mean, it's not my job to force anybody to open up.
How do you respond to people who would say that their particular situation is genetic? For example, someone who has severe bursitis in their hip that their parents had the same issue.
Well, what's interesting is that heart disease really is not very strongly genetically linked. Anybody who really fixes and modifies their diet to go on to an anti-heart disease diet can generally reverse their cholesterol and reverse the clogging in their arteries. Bursitis is generally an issue of how the joints fit together improperly. And we can certainly learn improper body movement and body structure from the people that we see the most. There may be something to it, but odds are we model what we see. You know, if we grow up in a family of marathon runners, maybe we'll become a marathon runner too, but we see what marathon runners look like. If we grow up in a family of people who eat improper food and don't exercise and smoke cigarettes and are alcoholics, that's what we see and that's what we model off of. Unless we have other role models in our life that give us something else to look at. The perception of what is good and bad, right and wrong, is, that's incredibly black and white wording, more or less effective, let's say that. I think that no matter where you are as a child, there is an idea that your parents are going to guide you in the right way. And so you trust them. And if they look and act a certain way, you trust that that's the way that you should look and act. So is it genetic? Well, you know, if you consider environmental upbringing genetic, then sure. Now, if you're talking actual physical genetic diseases that have a cause in the DNA, like, for example, familial hypercholesterolemia. I've met a few people with familial hypercholesterolemia, and for whatever reason, their body does not process fats in a way that a quote-unquote normal human being does, and so they have super high cholesterol, greater risk for heart attack and stroke. That's genetic. And so many genes have been mapped out for so many diseases, metabolic disorders, bone disorders, whatever the case may be. So we're in a unique situation now because back 5,000 years ago, they didn't have all this genetic testing. Ayurveda was basically a genomics of the past. And the only medicine they had was food and herbs, and trial and error. And now you can take a drop of blood from anybody and learn all of their genes and everything that could potentially go wrong inside of them or what could potentially be right inside of them to enhance their longevity. The question is, how are these two vast sets of knowledge going to fit together in the future so that humanity has an opportunity to optimize? And if not optimize, how are they going to have the opportunity to be sustainable, live long, healthy lives?
And one of the things that I really like about your practice is the fact that it definitely blends the old and the new. I mean, the body of knowledge is currently doubling every 9 months. The body of human knowledge, and which means pick a field, medicine, information technology, whatever, and it's doubling every 9 months. And those who are chasing the new knowledge have a very, very bad tendency to completely ignore the past. And it's human nature, because there's so much to learn that they can't be bothered with that stuff that their grandparents learned, much less stuff that's 5,000 years old. And I love the fact that you've figured out a path that pays homage to both the old and the new. That's a shout out about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, more and more people that I have the opportunity to encounter are intensely interested in the concepts of Ayurveda because it does offer a completely different perspective compared to the modern changing diet. Like you and I were talking earlier, what Weight Watchers changes its diet plan every 3 years to stay with the trends?
It wasn't so much trends as much as the latest developments in nutritional science.
Trends, you know, I mean, I think that nutritional science, it's science, you know, you gather a body of data and that data gives you information and that information creates trending information. So, you know, the low fat phase of the 80s, which, you know, a lot of that fat was replaced with sugar. You know, now
I'm going to interrupt a second.
I'm
going to interrupt just a second. Yeah, that's the difference in the word trend. When I said trend, I was thinking marketing and social trendy and what's new and cool. And when you said trend, as a scientist, you were thinking data and statistical correlation. Okay, I'm sorry. I hope I didn't interrupt your train of thought. I just had to inject that.
Oh, no. It's okay. It's all right. You know, and now what with, for example, the paleo diet has been a big deal for a while, and a lot of elimination diets have popped up. And, you know, when it comes down to it, it is a matter of trial and error for each person to understand what is optimal for them. But what I love about Ayurveda and the nutritional aspect of Ayurveda is that this information is old information. Now, whether or not you want to follow it is up to you. I've always kind of viewed life as not just a journey, but a little bit of an experiment as well. And if on my Ayurveda food list it says don't eat oranges and lemons and limes, and all of a sudden it's summertime, and I want some nice refreshing citrus juices, and I start drinking lemonade and limeade, and all of a sudden I start getting kind of aggravated in my body, kind of acidic and angry. Well, my Ayurveda food list says not to eat a lot of citrus because it also has the quality of fire. And when a fiery person eats fiery foods, they're going to get even more fiery. And what happens then? The emotions start getting out of whack. Whereas if a fiery person eats foods that have the opposite elements, then the fire, it will never really truly go out. But it'll reduce so that a person with a lot of fire in them can be a little more tame and still have that enthusiasm and motivation and brilliance that people love about the fire people, but without all of the anger and aggression and judgment that fire people can also have. Now, what kind of pill will help with that? Prozac? Xanax? But that particular pharmaceutical pill, being that it is an unnatural substance, will also have a slew of potential effects that are undesirable.
Got it. I want to add in on the whole pill is we've been talking all for 45 minutes now about what can I do to feel better, and I think that's certainly your approach to healing, and you brought the Western medicine approach, which is frequently and unfortunately, what can I take to feel better? So sometimes maybe you do need to take something to feel better, but generally it's the what can I do? And
sometimes people are at a point where they need it. They need the help of modern medicine, absolutely, 100%. Because the type of healing that is available in India, for example, at an Ayurvedic center to go do something like Panchakarma, which is a detoxification of the body, mind, and spirit because they're all connected, this is not readily accessible to most people in the United States. The average Panchakarma costs anywhere between $500 and $1,500 a day. And, you know, that is just not really accessible to people. But the knowledge of Ayurveda is growing, and there are plenty of people who give lectures, and it's definitely growing in St. Louis. I mean, on Facebook even yesterday, I saw that there are probably 4 lectures in January and February here in St. Louis by different people on Ayurveda. It's beautiful. I am so happy it's exploding. People need this information.
One of the co-owners of one of the top yoga studios in San Antonio is an Ayurveda practitioner. So it's not big in San Antonio, but it's big inside the yoga community inside San Antonio, which is a rather small subset of the city.
Well, it's the next step. It's the next logical step. And doing individual practice hatha yoga, yes. Doing individual practice feeding your body properly with the Ayurvedic principles, yes. But to come back around to what Soma Veda is the practical expression of loving kindness, using techniques that are powerful and sophisticated and thousands of years old. Soma Veda is also based on a lineage that's over 900 years old at the healing school in Bangkok, Thailand called Wat Pho. And so that is the tradition that I practice in and teach in, being in this lineage that is over 37 generations. I think that's the next step, too, because, you know, we can do a lot of things for ourselves, but one of the biggest blessings in life is giving to another person and having them feel amazing and giving them a new lease on life, sometimes even, with the practice. And maybe, and Soma Veda, any form of Thai massage is as beneficial for the giver as the receiver. I physically am doing yoga while doing yoga on another person. And that's what I really love sharing, both with clients and with my students alike.
That's an interesting image. I'm shifting gears a little bit now. I know that the Soma Veda tradition is heavily influenced by indigenous peoples. And before I ask you to talk about that, I'm going to share something that I learned over the summer. My wife and I were in Alaska, and we learned that the Intuit people. There's one of the Native Americans that are indigenous to the coast of Alaska. Their medicine people follow the bears because the bears are natural. Are naturals for seeking out the medicines in the flowers and the plants and in the berries. And typically it's the women of the tribe who were the medicine people. And by watching the bears, they learned what things to feed their families to alleviate pain. You know, certain barks will have aspirin-like qualities, and certain ones are a natural version of Imodium, and certain ones have the opposite effects. And they say that they learned it from the bears. But I thought that might be a good transition for you to talk about how your practice is influenced by indigenous peoples from North America. And we've talked a lot about Thailand and India, but other parts of the world.
Well,
go back to Thailand and India if you want to.
No. It's fine. So the Crow tribe in the Western United States, they have medicine people that are called pushers. And this is, you know, not the traditional concept of, you know, pushing drugs or whatever it is. This is literally using the hands, the feet, the body to push on a person who is ill. Mind, body, spirit. It could be people requiring exorcism. It could be people who have broken a bone and the bone needs to be set. The Crow people have the pushers. If you ever have a chance to get some Thai work done, which I know you have, Cliff, because I've worked on you, what do I do to you? I push on you. I push on you in all different directions. I bend you in a way and I push on you. I use my body to push on you. I use my feet to push on you. I use my hands to push on you. I use my elbows to push on you. So this is how the indigenous Thai healing ultimately fits in with North American indigenous healing. All of the concepts of healing in the world, you know, is it a surprise that they're so alike? You know, we use the whole body to treat the whole body. And that's one thing about traditional Thai, is that no physical implements beyond the human body are used. And I feel honored to be able to do that. Now, maybe, do I have enough body weight? Sometimes I feel like I don't, but I do my best. And I'm sure that's what the old healers of the traditions did as well. I also like to integrate at times some music into my healing. And this is just a little insight into how I practice, and I don't share this with a lot of people unless you've been on my mat. If there is something that I feel that needs to be spoken to, sometimes I'll talk to it with words, but sometimes I sing to it. And each song is unique. And people will ask me, like, what are you doing? What are you humming? What is this tune? I don't know what the tune is. The tune is whatever needs to be expressed at that moment. And if you look at the ancient indigenous people of Peru, for example, and the ayahuasca healers, the jungle medicine down in Peru and Ecuador and Brazil, they have the Icaros, they have the songs, they have the words and then the tunes that speak to the plant spirits. And so maybe I'm taking it to an additional level that I didn't think I would talk about, but as every single ache and pain in our body, every single maybe karmic issue that people have to deal with in their life. You know, sometimes I sing to it. Sometimes pushing on it is enough, though.
Wow, that really does tie in with the Native American traditions, because singing and chanting is certainly a big part of every Native American ceremony that I'm familiar with.
Absolutely, and the songs have been passed on for so long, and that's another thing about Indigenous communities, not to take too much more time, I know we have to part soon, but most Indigenous communities have had their knowledge destroyed and somehow has been pieced together as best as possible. I think that even if all the ancient knowledge had been destroyed, that the intent and the purpose behind whatever has been recreated will still remain as powerful, because intention is the most powerful thing. That's what we learned in massage school. It's not what you do, it's your intention behind it that truly leads to the progress or healing of another person. And almost every ancient culture has had that knowledge decimated, but, you know, some have been lucky enough to only have 95% of the books burned instead of all of them. Or, you know, only 95% of the people killed through genocide instead of all of them. So take that for what you will. I think that preserving ancient traditions, Indigenous traditions, is incredibly important. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm adding something new, but most importantly, you know, we have to preserve what is the old ways while also respecting the new ways and hoping that the new ways can make room also for the old ways to come back, because they wouldn't be around this long if they weren't important.
That's actually a great place to pause. I would normally run a pre-recorded commercial for Dead Hackers, but we're running really low on time. So I'm just going to simply say, if you're having trouble with debt, being it debt from the medical industrial complex, student loan debt, or debt that you got into because of the fact that you went crazy with credit cards, check out our website, debthackers.org, and get it. We have some programs to help you get out of the mess that you've found yourself in. Please just give it a visit. So, in giving you a couple of minutes to wrap up, any closing thoughts or specific things you want to talk about with your website, which is totalharmony.com,
well,
or anything upcoming that you're going to be doing?
Sure. Totalharmony.com has a couple different aspects to it and talks about my practice and my ministry through the Native American Indigenous Church and all of the physical and energetic and hands-on healing that I have the opportunity to offer members, people who decide to sign up as participating members of the NAIC. And then I also have my Learn Thai Yoga website, which is in the Soma Veda style. And I have several level one trainings coming up this year. They're all on the website. And my next one is February 25th and 26th in St. Louis, Missouri. The attendance is capped at 12 people. And I feel very blessed. I had 7 trainings last year and now have 48 students that have gone through my course. And then I have a level 2 training coming up. One's in March and April, and then one is in August and September. And that's when people have the opportunity to go past the 16-hour appetizer, which I like to call it, into the meat and potatoes. Oh, sorry, for the vegetarians, the tofu and potatoes. And that offers a 1 to 2.5 hour Thai yoga session that people can learn and share with the ones that they love. And I feel really blessed to have been condoned in the system in order to teach in this way. It's very martial arts in its style, and it is a discipline, and it requires strength and dedication. And, you know, for people who feel like they have what it takes to become a Thai yoga therapist, if they really want to be a healer, it's an amazing way for any individual in any walk of life to take that next step and heal other people while healing themselves.
That's fantastic. It's almost time to close. I want to talk a little bit about some of our upcoming shows. The Winter of Wellness is about more than just healing and learning to thrive in the mind, body, spirit. This year, we're also going to be focusing in healing some of the financial situations that are going on in the world. And to that end, our next show is going to be a conversation with Bitcoin evangelist Andre Gonzalez. Andy is a friend of mine in San Antonio, and he is very, very well versed in Bitcoin and the blockchain and how it can help heal our financial system, just like the Thai massage, Thai yoga that Maureen's been talking about can help heal the body and the mind and the spirit. We're also spinning off a bit of our show. We had been doing what we used to call empathy segments, which are change yourself, change the world, focusing on things like hope and gratitude and relieving lack. But my new co-host in that area is Morgan Brown Bronco. She just got married New Year's Eve, and I was blessed to be – Karen and I were blessed to be in her attend her wedding. And we're looking forward to seeing how that goes. Maureen, thanks again for coming. Thanks again for being so enthusiastic when I first broached the idea. And thanks for everything you do in making people better.
Well, thanks again for this opportunity, Cliff. I was really honored when you asked me. And hope I'll be a guest again someday.
I look forward to it. Until then, have a great winter.
I'm so grateful you chose to spend this time with me. Remember that every one of us builds this new era one choice at a time. Start living now like it's already here. Commit a random act of kindness this week. Make healthy, sustainable choices. Choose peace. Choose abundance. Then celebrate your progress and passion. It is important to know that the future is in your hands. You create it through the choices you make in the now. See you next week.